Hello and welcome to Saffron Says. It's heard every week here on Global Community Radio, Channel 1, Geneva, New York, globalcommunityradio.blogspot.com, news and more, and the Big Red Button, Victor, New York, thebigredbutton.info, press for the best. So I'm going to talk about an experience I had when I was younger. This was the first time I ever really spent any real time alone, and you want to talk about any sort of separation anxiety, okay? I hadn't been away from my mother, really, for terribly long. I always remember feeling like whenever they did go out and we were left with a babysitter, and by they I mean my mother and my father, it seemed like it took forever for them to come home, even though it was... It feels like... sometimes they'd be gone for what felt like 4 hours or something like that. Even though it's only like 2 hours and the like. Well, as I got older, that seemed to... what seemed like, where's that 4 hours? Seemed like now it's only like 2 hours, etc., etc. And that is how I met the woman from whom I got my name, was, my mother and father went out, she babysat us. Unfortunately, even though it felt like, ages, I have almost no memory in my head of that happening, and it almost feels like it didn't happen, except for the fact that I had to have learned that name somewhere. And I remember a woman with black curly hair. And, it had to have come from somewhere. So, I am not going to, by any means, discount the possibility of this happened. It had to have happened. It had to have happened. There's no two ways around that. So, that is not what we are talking about now. What we are talking about now is this whole idea of my first real experience away from home. And by real experience, I'm talking about, not overnight, not, with a babysitter, etc., etc. This was going to camp for the first time. This was when I first went to Camp Abilities, and let me tell you something. I did not want to go. I really did not want to go. You could not talk me into it, no matter what you did. I did not want to go. And this was a week that I had to spend in Brockport. And why do I not count, Camp Smile? Well, that's a day camp for the most part. Except for the very, the second to last, or the last, night, second to last day, so 2 days, one night, really. That was, one night where we were overnight, we were in tents, etc., etc. Now, you could not talk me into going. I was crying. I was, Mom, don't make me go. I don't want to go. That kind of thing. And I was, could you believe I was 11? I was 11, and I was acting like this. Well, ain't that a peach? Well, that's, who I was when I was younger. I very much held on to a lot of my child self, and it was very strange, I guess. Because I guess somehow I knew what would happen when I hit puberty, and I guess that, I wanted to avoid growing up into a man, so to speak. So, Camp Abilities. I get there, and I'm, misty-eyed almost the entire time. I'm kind of like, meh. And then Mom leaves, and we get settled into our rooms, and my counselor, I couldn't tell you what the bloody heck her name was to save life. I think it was Emily. I want to say that was her name. I seem to remember an Emily. I don't remember, but, like, I can almost picture her clear as day, and she looked like a freaking Emily in the picture. So, there was that, and then there was my roommate, Jacob. Now, to tell you about Jacob here, he's deaf and blind, so I didn't have to worry so much about making any noise, because he was, well, he didn't really hear me. So, you've got my deaf-blind roommate, who, after a while, became, you know, my best friend. He was like one of my best friends. And so, yeah, and he's, you know, I couldn't tell with him if he was eager to go home or if he wanted to stay, and he knew that he could only go home on Thursday. Either way, I know he kept signing home Thursday. I remember that clear as day, because Heather would basically translate into spoken English what he was saying, and, you know, it was always home Thursday, and that's when she would go over the schedule with him. Now, getting here, and I'm just like, it just seemed so cool, because, you know, we talked about kind of the, you know, what we'd be doing. I met people, and, you know, we met our groups. I was Group A. The A team, we were called. And in meeting these people was pretty gosh darn cool, I'll tell you that much. And so then you get to that night, that first night. It was a Friday night. And was it night one? I don't remember. There was like one night in the, yeah, okay. So we presented an award, and I was actually presenting the award to these people who helped provide from the Lions Club. And we also went on a wagon ride over to a barbecue. That had to be two separate nights, I feel like. Unless that announcement, I don't remember, because I don't remember the exact, like, order of events, but, you know, going through beat baseball, going through tandem biking, going through goal ball was awesome, and, you know, meeting this guy named Terry Kelly, who would come out and sing for us, wow, just wow, the memories are all starting to come back to me, and I remember, you know, enjoying tandem biking, enjoying swimming, enjoying the track and field, etc., etc. I remember talking to my mom the next night and saying how this was awesome. And Hans Mayer, who was another artist, who, he did more children's-oriented songs. And his were kind of fun. I started to really, like, start to remember Terry's songs and Hans's songs, and that was interesting over the years. But, you know, those first time, like, okay, I retained bits and pieces of this, but I had gotten to meet, you know, Jacob, my friend Zeb was a good friend of mine, his friend Sam. I remember Sam telling me I had a fat tush. Sam was a dork. Blaze, I didn't really so much talk to over the years. Well, until over the years. We didn't really talk much at the start. But Zeb was a good friend of mine. And then you had Jacob, of course. And one other really great experience was this talent show. Now, I did not have any faith in my ability to sing, and I certainly didn't have any faith in my ability to play the piano at the time, because I quit piano lessons, and I was just starting to play trombone, which actually gave credence to the group song, where my line was, insert old name here, knows how to play trombone, which kind of fits, because it was a one-syllable name for a verbal cadence. And so then this talent show rolls around, and the MC for it is someone who I thought was kind of brought in. Like, I didn't think that this person was a kid. I thought that... I thought that it was just someone brought in from the outside. But this person's name was Crash. But apparently this Crash was a camper, and at the time, Crash was pretty tall. I remembered a tie-dye shirt, a bike helmet, and glasses, and Crash just seemed very outgoing. I didn't know it at the time. I thought there was something bizarre about him. A few years later, I knew what being gay was, because, you know, you hear talk about that, but you don't really know what it is, but then you start to identify the signs. So I'm like, wait, this Crash must have been gay. Come to find out that, well, Crash is transgender and became the Serena that I dated for a while and hope to honestly come back to at some point in my life if, you know, things permit. I'm not gonna sugarcoat things because... in reality, I can't help it. But I remember telling these cheesy jokes, these cheesy, punny, horrible jokes. And by horrible, I mean boo, hiss, kind of thing. And so, the sleepover, I remember, you know, asking Zeb, and I didn't want to leave Jake out. I really didn't want to leave Jacob out of this. So it was me, it was Jacob, it was Zeb. And that was really cool. Now, later on in that camp history, they did a duathlon on the second to last day. They didn't do that at first, and they didn't have the poker chips as any sort of incentive. The only difference is that the poker chips didn't really seem to do anything. Now that said, switching over to media analysis, I want to look at a concept called Baudelaireization, and what really brought this to light was I found the original dub of Yu-Gi-Oh! And I guess this was before the 4Kids dub. And I say this because, you know, it had Dan Green in it, and Dan Green is the one that played Yugi. It had Dan Green, and he was definitely using some interesting lines, contrary to what he used in 4Kids. For example, the attack that I knew to be Exodia Obliterate was actually, not actually, but he was calling it Exodo Hellfire something. And I'm like, seriously?
Are you serious? Did you really just censor that out? Okay, I was taught that maybe you can't say hell. But, I mean, come on!
Okay, and then you get into things... Okay, redubbing is one thing. That's somewhat frustrating only when you find out what's going on. I hate the never say die trope. Because it's like when you say, oh, this person was taken or they were hurt. In the Yu-Gi-Oh case, it's used a lot of times to talk, you know, it's used a lot of times as the Shadow Realm. Well, the Shadow Realm is a thing. I mean, it was created by Zork Necrophotis, wherein he, you know, he created the Netherworld, but it wasn't the Shadow Realm. This was the Netherworld. This was, like, hell. And where this became a problem was you had things like, oh, these dark energy discs are gonna send you to the Shadow Realm the minute they touch you. That was... And they looked a heck of a lot like saw blades, buzz saws. Okay. These dark energy discs are going to send you to the Shadow Realm, and... Oh, and that was a what-the-heck moment. Of course, this never occurred to me as a kid. I went with it. Because, hello, magic glowy thingy, of course it's going to send you to the Shadow Realm. The other interesting thing was, you're gonna fall and this magic portal is gonna send you to the Shadow Realm. That was in a tag team duel. That was kind of interesting, because usually when you fall, you die. That's noteworthy. Usually when you fall, you die. Again, these were things I realized when I was much, much older. When I was younger, you know, one of the characters, Bandit Keith, did a pointing thing at Pegasus, and he went, give me the prize money or else! I'm gonna give you to the count of three. Come to find out that he actually pulled a gun on him. At first, when someone told me that, I was like, wait, why would they do that? This is supposed to be a children's cartoon. Well, in reality, if you look at the dubs side by side, no, it isn't. No, it legitimately isn't. Pac-Man and the Ghostly Adventures loves this trope. And they're not even subtle about it. They're not even Baudelaireizing. What they're doing is they're kind of censoring a little bit. Because, like, when he talks about when your parents... he said, you know, my parents... And then there's this empty pause here where they should say died. I mean, I get that death is tough to talk about, but don't write it into your plot if you're going to go ahead and Baudelaireize it. That's kind of where I'm coming from, is don't write it into your plot if you're going to Baudelaireize it. If you're going to, you know, he was hurt, he was sent to the Shadow Realm, or he was this, he was that, and that's the never say die trope. Here's another one that's really annoying. When people kind of play with the idea, and I'm saying play with because, I mean, this comes up. The idea of Nazism or Nazism, Germany, and Hitler. But they take out the swastikas. Okay, why do you have Nazis in there but no swastikas? Why not just have no Nazis? As a matter of fact, the whole thing could be better if you just wrote the Nazis out of your plot, because then you don't have to censor anything. Another one I don't like is... Yeah, so no swastikas, because this one can be screwed with in amazingly hilarious ways. armbands with frowny faces. Come on, Hey Arnold. Hey Arnold, you're supposed to be a cartoon. Why do you write things into this? They even invoke the kind of, not necessarily never say die, but they avoid the whole idea of hell. Here lies Cynthia Snell. She lived her life and went straight to... And then Arnold says, I can't say the last word. So... Okay, so you have the hell issue in Hey Arnold. You have the swastika issue in Hey Arnold. You have the frothy mugs of water issue. This one's really annoying. Of course, I'm not going to pick up on this as a kid. But they say, oh, drinking smoothies. They're not smoothies, they're alcohol. And yeah, the person's quote-unquote drinking the smoothies and says they need smoothies and adding Tabasco sauce to the smoothies, I think that one's interesting, is slurring her words. She's out of a job. She doesn't have a driver's license. Huh, I wonder. Actually, if you think about it, if you really think about it and you add the whole idea of the alcohol back into something like Hey Arnold, Helga's got, contrary to Arnold, Helga has a verbally abusive father who, along with the mother, doesn't want anything mentioned in therapy. I don't know why I didn't pick up on this. Some things are best swept under the rug. Ugh. And then the mother's drinking, quote-unquote, smoothies. The father can't even remember one of his daughter's names, calls her by her older sister's name. I mean, seriously? And that's what a lot of the censorship and desensitization, that's the truth that's hidden behind these things. Legend of Korra is another interesting example where they like to invoke never say die. They say, they don't confirm, in one case, in Avatar, they don't confirm, whether Jet was killed or not, but they imply it like, oh yeah, he's gonna be fine. Toph says, no, he's lying. So that's, frustrating as it is. In Legend of Korra, the Earth Queen gets killed by basically having the air sucked out of her. And, they say, oh, we brought down the Earth Queen. Well, in Monarchy, yeah, brought down can mean a few different things. It can mean killed. You can dethrone them in many different ways. I'm surprised. It's bizarre. Aang took away the Fire Lord's ability to bend. I'm pretty sure if that was in any, realistic media, he probably would have killed him. Because even if the Fire Lord can't bend as such, he'd still be Fire Lord. How is it now that just depowering him basically dethrones him? It sounded weird when I said it. Okay, de-energizing dethrones him. So I think there's a little something there to kind of try and censor death. You don't find out... they say that Zuko's mother did treacherous things so that Ozai could become Fire Lord, and for that she was banished. What they don't tell you is that she straight up poisoned the Fire Lord. Fire Lord Azulon, that is. And for that, she was banished. I think that's interesting. I think that's very interesting. So again, you're invoking Never Say Die here, and I haven't even scratched the surface. I don't see very many of the other tropes. I don't see... you don't often see things like family-friendly firearms unless it's, like, carried over from something that originally had them, i.e., you know, anime from Japan, thanks Yu-Gi-Oh! Or Dragon Ball Z or something like that. No smoking. You don't often see it. I mean, I've heard that SpongeBob, the bubbles, are supposed to be a reference to smoking, but I don't know. Sounds bizarre to me. Because it's only SpongeBob that does this. That would imply that he's the only one who smokes. Well, I don't believe that's the truth either. So, again, this is, you know, kind of my talk on bowdlerization. That being said, until next time, Saffron says, have a nice week.